If you love the national parks as much as we do, then we have a book recommendation for you.
Moon USA National Parks Hiking is a brand new guidebook from Moon Travel Guides that covers the top 100 hikes across 40 U.S. national parks.
Whether you want to descend into the Grand Canyon, stroll the shoreline in Acadia, or cling to the cliff edges in Shenandoah, Moon USA National Parks Hiking gives you the inspiration to find the perfect hike for you and the practical planning tips to make it happen. You'll find everything from easy, family-friendly hikes to strenuous, multi-day treks, plus tips for wildlife watching, backpacking, finding solitude, and more.
This book is an essential resource for National Parks fans, as well as a fantastic holiday gift for any outdoorsy people on your list.
You can find Moon USA National Parks Hiking wherever books are sold, or click the link in our show notes. And if you don't already have a copy on your shelf, be sure to also check out the original award-winning best-selling guide that started it all, Moon USA National Parks.
Find your trail and prepare for an unforgettable journey in America's top national parks with Moon Travel Guides. Moon, let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide. We got to talk about this game we've been playing, which is a lot of fun. I don't think it would make the most sense for a middle of the episode game.
Okay.
But it's a game that we...
We've played it on a trail, I think.
We have played it on a trail. I just don't know that it was as interactive. I guess it could be.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about it now. It's not our game for later. It's this game where we take a movie, book, film, television show, and...
Something with a collection of characters.
Mm-hmm. And we go through and we decide what their zodiac signs are going to be.
Yes, but we do it so that we both guess at the same time in hopes that we're thinking of the same one.
Right. And we are pretty good.
We're pretty good.
And then there's a period of argument where if we disagree,
then you advocate
for why your choice is the better choice.
And then typically one person is the better argument and you go with the better argument.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
okay, great.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a callback to, I think a few episodes ago, you were like, remember when we used to do park zodiac signs? And I was thinking the same thing.
It's true. We used to.
I mean, we do love our astrology.
That was a bit we did not let. We committed to the bit for
a while. Like maybe seasons 1 through 3.
Yeah.
And then we let that
go. Not anymore.
Dead to us. So I think it would be fun to play that with the characters from the movie Clue.
Oh, great.
Also, it's Clue's 40th anniversary this year.
Correct.
Yep, exactly. And they're re-releasing it in theaters, and you can go and see a different ending
See it 3 times in order to see all 3 endings. Because
mm-hmm.
they're doing one ending on Monday night, one ending on Tuesday, one ending on Wednesday, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Okay, so great. Let's start with Wadsworth.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got an idea.
I have an idea too. 3, 2, 1. Virgo.
Sagittarius.
Oh, okay.
Interesting that you thought Virgo and I thought Sagittarius. Mm-hmm. Okay. Argue for why.
Because he's very organized and he's trying to get everything to be straight and organized. And he's the one that mailed everybody letters to get them to come.
He's
trying to kind of push the plot along, but in a very organized sort of way.
Oh, you know what? I think you've won this argument. Mm-hmm.
What was your argument for Sagittarius?
Well, my argument for Sagittarius was like at the end of it, he's like, why would the police come? Nobody's called them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But that's only one of the endings. It's all facade.
But
it's still an elaborately planned facade.
Right. And a Sagittarius could never. So we're going to go with a Virgo. I like that Virgo.
Great.
Okay, great.
All right.
Let's do Miss Scarlet.
Miss Scarlet. Okay. I'm ready. 3, 2, 1. Aries.
Leo.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Same
so
neighborhood.
Fire.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So why Aries?
Because she's kind of chaotic. She's got that chaos energy around her, like very brash decision making. She's kind of a spitfire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that she's like the me center of attention, but I could see that.
I think she is a little bit, and she definitely has some like sort of mother lion energy to her about the business she used to run.
Sure.
So that's sort of why I feel that way when it comes to Leo.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, great. I'll accept that. I accept your Leo.
Okay. All right.
Great. Fire sign though, for sure.
Fire sign.
All right. Let's do Mr. Green.
Mr. Green. Okay.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Libra.
Capricorn.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. We are way off of this today.
Today.
Okay. So Okay, you said Libra, I said Capricorn. I'll argue why for Capricorn when it comes to Mr. Green, because the buck ultimately does stop with him, at least in one of the endings.
Right.
He takes the whole thing down and he ends up on top, which is a very Capricorn thing to do. If we're going by the truth in the one ending, then he, you know, has been subverting the thing the whole time, which is sort of why
this
feel
makes
like
it hard, because we have very different sort of motivations depending on the ending.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
I'm going off of like the main chunk of the film before we hit ending mode.
I wouldn't say Libra for him, because like he's not like a super like personable person at a party. Not that all Libras are, but you are at a party though, you are gregarious and you talk to everybody.
Sure.
Like Libras are super friendly and super social.
I just feel like he's wishy-washy and often kind of goes back and forth on where he is.
But I don't think that's a Libra thing. I think that's unfairly associated to them.
Okay, great. I guess so, Capricorn. I don't know. I don't really feel strongly
about
either of ours.
Maybe we might need to find another one, but we'll do that another time. Let's do one more.
Okay, great. Let's do Miss Peacock.
Mrs. Peacock. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, wait. I got to think about this. Oh, I got it.
Okay.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Aquarius. There we go.
There it is. There's no way she's not. She is absolutely 100% an Aquarius.
Absolutely.
I'll wear the weird outfit. Mm-hmm. I'll do the thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind hosting a party because it's part of my husband's work and I do it all the time. And oh my goodness, is this delicious.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting and hiking in the land, also known as Death Valley National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Kauai Sioux and Western Shoshone people.
This is our Small Trails episode of Death Valley, because we do like to do this in each park at some point. We've started to...
it's possible.
There were quite a few of these. So this episode is a lot of trails that we did that were
tiny,
smaller, that don't take a lot of time.
Nope.
You could do them in like maybe 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So not all together,
no,
but one at a time, right?
Yeah.
They're really easy to like toss onto like after big trail.
Yep.
Or you could string them all together to make one day of it if you wanted to.
Especially the ones that we're talking about right now, because they're all right.
They're all drivable from each other.
You know, depending on how you play your cards, you could probably throw in Badwater Basin to this string of small trails, even though it's a very cool experience to have in the moonlight or at night. And you should definitely check out episode 142 for more information on that.
That's true. Another thing we want to add is that we talked a lot about Zabriskie Point in our Golden Canyon and Gower Gulch Loop episode. Mm-hmm. And that too could be considered like a small experience because you can take 190 out to the parking lot for Zabriskie Point Park and just walk up to Zabriskie Point, see the incredible views you get from there, and then head back down to the car.
It's true. And that's also a great experience for sunset, because you do get some beautiful color, especially if you got some cloudy skies.
Now, when it comes to all of the trails in this episode, we did not do all of them in the same day.
No.
The first one that we're going to talk about is Natural Bridge. Natural Bridge was something we hiked prior to hiking Mount Perry, which you'll hear in another episode. It's actually two separate episodes because that trail was so epic.
Yes,
so
sir.
It required two episodes.
Yep.
And the other small trail and experiences in this episode that we did after our Golden Canyon loop include the Artist Palette, the Artist Drive, and the Devil's Golf Course.
Again, these three things are from this episode, but those three things plus Badwater Basin are essentially all clustered together on Badwater Road. So again, something to potentially think about doing all in the same shot. It would be a short afternoon. It could be like a, we've arrived late and we want to do this, or we only have a little bit of the time. We only have a little bit of time in the morning before we're headed out. This would be a perfect thing to be able to do, like, in a very succinct and short sort of way.
And you definitely do want to do all of these things.
Absolutely.
So the first one up is Natural Bridge. Okay, so since this little hike that we did was prior to a bigger day of hiking, we did this in the morning to avoid crowds and heat. And so we made our way to Natural Bridge very, very early. We did our usual wake up routine as we went through the day, started to get more and more condensed as we would, you know, we would get up, make coffee, eat our overnight oats, make sure like our packs were already in the car, our shoes were already in the car. It was kind of just like coffee, breakfast, hit the road.
But we also started to make the coffee, pour it into like usable, like reusable tall mugs and eat our overnight oats in the car so that we could even just be a swifter exit. And kind of that's where we were. Also overnight oats for the win.
For the win. They're great, everybody.
Yep.
Also, we love to throw in protein powder in overnight oats. Yep. We do that. It's okay to do that overnight as well.
It is, or in the morning if you'd like. It is a very early ride up to Natural Bridge. This is the same road, so this is Badwater Road, that we had to take to get out to Badwater Basin, and the same road that we took to Golden Canyon, but it was much earlier of a trip than the previous two times that we had headed out. It's a really, really purplish, pinkish early morning sky over Death Valley, and the sun is only just starting to come up over the peaks of the range, but not even like we're just getting light. We're not getting sunlight. It's just like ambient sort of dawn light.
The pull-off for Natural Bridge is really close to the junction with 190, because basically you're driving the car on 190, you got to turn off of 190 onto Badwater Road, and shortly after that is this parking lot for Natural Bridge. So it can get crowded really quick because it's close to the junction. It is better to do this one very early in the morning. The other thing is, because it's a canyon, it'll help avoid the heat if you do that.
That's really important too. You're essentially at a very wide wash-like canyon all the way up to Natural Bridge. So by midday, you'd just be completely in exposed sun. So it would not be great for hiking in the heat purposes.
No.
After traveling out on the main road on Badwater Road, we have to take a pull-off road that leads us up to Natural Bridge, which is about 1.5 miles up. This is an extremely bumpy road and has a lot of washout and giant potholes. It's a reason to definitely have a vehicle that has four-wheel drive and is not a low sedan, because that would not be fun. I do think we did see someone driving out with like a four-door sedan, and it was the slowest of slow going is what it would have been.
Yeah. Certainly.
I think this would probably be akin to what it would have been like to go out to the Grapevine Hills section of Big Bend to see Balanced Rock, which is something we didn't do because we did not have four-wheel drive. We had, when we were in Big Bend, asked the ranger if we could actually walk the road, which would have been shorter than this. I think it was only like 0.7 out, and the ranger advised us not to. And I'd imagine you could probably do the same thing here, but you're definitely adding a lot of steps. You're adding like 3 miles onto this very short trail.
And it's all incline.
Yeah, and that road is not fun. And I can't imagine if people are driving up and down it, even if they're driving carefully, that it would feel very safe for a pedestrian.
Yes. So when we arrive, the parking lot is totally empty. There's this gorgeous shot of the moon out toward Telescope Peak because the moon was still visible and full. It was a full moon and it was over the range that was across Badwater, and it was stunning. There is a pit toilet here for facilities use if needed. Mm-hmm. From here, decide to head out to the thing we're looking for, which is we have to walk up this really, really wide wash in order to get there.
And it's just filled with loose rock. It is a ton of trudging that we have to do. It's only about 1/3 of a mile for this hike, but it's very, very slow going because of this loose gravel-like rock. It's almost like scree.
Almost.
Almost. It's also definitely a reason to go early too, so you aren't trudging through the loose rock in the heat.
Yeah, that would not be fun. Mm-mm. So we eventually get into the narrower part of the canyon with more interesting rock walls. We've got striations here and some incredible contours happening along the walls. As we get a little closer, it is clear that we are getting closer to the natural bridge. We arrive and we've got the place entirely to ourselves.
Absolutely.
I'm quoting Noises Off at this point. But yes, we do. Yeah, it was so much fun because we went early.
Yeah, early and often is always good. Natural Bridge is essentially an archway that connects the canyon walls. It's really, when you boil it down, that's exactly what it is.
And I just want to say, there's a lot of places that have a feature called a natural bridge.
Yep.
Natural bridge is a very common word. I'm thinking of at least four other places in national parks that have something like this.
Sure.
And that is all it means, is that there is a natural connecting point between like one thing and another, creating a natural bridge.
Yep. We can still look up the canyon here. There is a peak that's perfectly framed by the archway. The light is still very dull and very early morning light, and it's very lovely here.
It was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful.
It was a perfect time to be there.
The morning light was perfect for this section. I definitely don't want to do this section in midday light. Cynthia continues a little further along beyond the arch, but we decide that we're okay to just stop here, like right at the arch or a little before. The canyon does continue to get a little narrower as you go up further beyond the arch. We take lots of photos, including some usies, which is what we call group photos of us that we have to take ourselves. And
always better than someone else taking them for you, too.
We've got to talk about that.
I mean, we have talked about
We've talked about it, but we got to bring it up again.
Mm-hmm.
I think let's all just... Well, one, I think it is like a safe thing to say that photos that other people take of you are never going to look good. Mm-hmm. They just never do.
Unless they're trained professionals.
Unless they're trained professionals. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The photos that you take of other people look pretty darn good. Not necessarily because you're a professional photographer, but your eye is,
angles.
Your eye is trained.
And composition.
You do. And so you make sure that everybody looks fabulous in those photos.
I try my best.
This was mostly because there was literally no one else there. So we had no other choice.
Right.
We turn around here and we start to head back because we knew we had quite a drive ahead of us because we had to get to Dante's View.
This will happen. We will talk about Dante's View in two other episodes, that's what we did do after this on this day. It's really fun, though, to note that when we were hiking the hike from Dante's View to Mount Perry, we could actually see this roadway that we had traveled up to Natural Bridge. So the road that cut off of the main road, Badwater Road, you can actually see it from above, including all the other things that we're about to talk about today. It was very cool to have this aerial view later on. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
And to give some quick context there, 190 is the major road that runs through Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of come in on Death Valley like from the east on 190, and it kind of like goes from the east to northwest, like you're taking this road up, and you can get to a lot of the major stuff that way. And then Badwater Road cuts south off of 190, because in between 190 and Badwater Road is this like incredible range of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the hikes that we did were inside of that range.
Yeah,
so we were either accessing it from Badwater Road or from 190.
Or I-90. As we start to head back, there's lots of chats about Wizard of Oz and what characters would be, because I think the four of us being in a row like that.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And there was definitely some skip-step attempts that I just don't have the rhythm for that.
Well, you'll work on it.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be great.
Uh-huh. And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
All right, so we are playing a new game, but I actually feel like it's kind of an offshoot of Commission an Album or the other games that we play that involve musicians. So it's called Desert Music Festival. So you are creating a desert music festival. You are going to come up with three headlining acts that are going to be at that music festival. And I want to know what those acts are. And I want you to think they don't necessarily have to be related. Like, it doesn't have to be the same genre of music, because that's not what festivals are all the time. But I do want you to give me your reasoning on why those artists would be strung together.
Okay. What a great kind of thing to do.
You're
here.
Like Amy Grant and Vogue.
Well, okay. I'm inspired by the fact that it is a desert music festival. Mm-hmm. I think, like, trying to think about, like, well, what music is gonna, like, play well in the desert?
Yanni.
I used to listen to Yanni as an elementary schooler all the time. I was like, can we play the hot man with the mustache playing piano? I never said that. I was way too scared to say that.
You're like, just get everyone off of the Pure Moods album.
Yeah. I did like Enya. I'm not gonna, I mean, I still sometimes listen to Enya. I mean, who, God love her. She lives in her castle by herself with her dogs in the middle of Scotland. What a dream, right? No kids. For the desert specifically, I think I have to start with Stevie Nicks. Like, I just feel like it's very kind of like, and I now feel like we're doing a kind of
She's
like,
touring too, so makes
like
sense.
Like, bit of like a classic kind of rock kind of vibe here. We're starting off with Stevie Nicks, and then Tina Turner.
Oh, holler out.
Yeah, exactly. I do feel like Tina Turner in the desert would just be everything. And then I think the big final act is Phil Collins.
Oh, fascinating.
This just feels like a desert music festival to me. Great. And then, like, at the end, they're all three going to be there and sing things together. Oh, like, they're going to
they
do a
sing.
Set together.
Now I'm
well,
curious.
I feel like, I'm not going to lie, I really, really want to hear Stevie Nicks and Phil Collins on You're Simply the Best. Mm. Like, we need that. I feel like they could probably cover just the three of them. We Are the World. I don't know that Stevie Nicks would ever participate in anything like that necessarily, but something like that. God, I want Phil Collins to be like, sing with me on some of the Tarzan music. Mm-hmm. You know,
you'll be in my heart.
Maybe, yeah. Stevie Nicks would never, I don't think. I really don't think. But I feel like
I think Calling at the Edge of Night, right? Is that his song? I can feel it call. Oh, Calling in the Air Tonight, not
in
the
Air Tonight.
Yeah, in the Air Tonight.
That one too.
That's with like the drum solo.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum,
that
bum,
he does.
Bum, bum,
Doesn't
bum, bum, bum,
he do the drum solo? Mm-hmm. Because he plays drums.
I think
on
that would be great.
Stuff. That would be awesome. I would see that. And I'm not even like a really hard Phil Collins fan, but I just feel like his music just lands in the desert very well. Mm-hmm. And I feel like so would Tina's, and certainly so would Stevie's. So that's my music festival. What about you?
Well, I'm doing all the pop girlies.
I would call mine the Desert Rose Music Festival. FYI. Even though
That's Sting.
Whatever, yeah. Sting.
Sting's We're people will be very it. Litigious, I
okay,
believe.
I guess we can't view Desert Rose anyway.
It could be the Dessert Rose.
The Dessert Rose. That's it.
I hope that there's someone who's a really big Sting fan that has made that dessert.
I hope so too.
Space for themselves.
That dessert space. I'm sorry. We have to stop right now. Okay. So whenever Mike talks about it started recently, whenever you mention like going to a place to get ice cream, you call it, can we go to the ice cream space? That is what you call it.
It is. It's true.
And so now forever when there is a dessert space, that is what we call it. An ice cream space or a cupcake space.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Right. Anyway, what is your Desert Rose Music Festival?
So mine would be all the pop girlies I just want to see that should be doing concerts in the desert. It would start with Jessie Ware.
Oh, yes.
because I feel like she'd live her caftan desert queen life. And I feel like that sort of music is a lot of fun and could be, I just want it to be a big dance party. It's going to end with it's going to end with something that's really dancey. In between, though, of the dancey girls is going to be little spectral, waif-like Florence and the Machine.
Yes.
Because I feel like we need her spooky energy to permeate the desert.
We do.
She's the Stevie Nicks of our time.
Oh, completely. Completely.
She also has these like very almost operatic ballads that she creates. And I feel like in the desert, it would be hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah.
And then because I want it to be a real big dance party at the end, it would be Kylie.
Oh, yeah.
End with Kylie.
Yeah, that's great.
You got to work the order there.
Okay, so what are
they singing together?
The three of them, because it's Kylie, Florence, and Jessie Ware. What are they singing together? They would sound amazing together.
Oh, it would be Locomotion.
Yes, God, they would all
because
dig that.
Seeing that live at MSG when we did.
Oh my God, that
was
the one
most
of the
fun,
best experiences of my life. Watching Kylie do Locomotion live. Y'all go see Kylie on tour. Those tickets were not expensive. No. That was one of the best concerts we've ever seen.
Yeah. I think they could also sing Free Yourself by Jessie Ware. I think it would be a medley of Dog Days, and then into Locomotion.
See, I want Free Yourself into...
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Into Free by Florence. Because I feel like that is like... Yeah. That feels more like...
Yeah.
Big and desert and like, you know, like open...
You're right. And then Locomotion.
God, we need to go to these. Imagine if my festival was night one and yours was night two. Come on.
Look at
like,
that.
What do you, like, there's no comparison.
There isn't.
No.
And that's Desert Music Festival.
I'm really not a music festival person. You know this.
I do.
Because there is a really great music festival that happens very near you every year. And have I ever been?
You have not.
Never.
No. Because and I've been every year but one.
There was one I almost got a ticket to in Baltimore this year.
I'm sorry, where?
In Baltimore.
Yeah, that's okay.
This year, because En Vogue was going to be there. And I will show up for En Vogue.
Or you say you will.
But I didn't. I didn't this year. I didn't.
No.
But I do love them. Mm-hmm. I have loved them my entire life. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a tape when I was little, dad had a tape and I was always listening to it and I was like, they are the real deal. Mm-hmm. Like,
gay.
I do love them.
Mm-hmm.
I do love them.
Well, speaking of artists, let's head over to Artist's Palette, which is the next little small trail experience that we had when we were in Death Valley. So
that's right.
Not far from Natural Bridge is Artist Palette and Artist Drive. So Artist Drive is a scenic drive within the park with a viewpoint that has a very small hike. And we do mean very small.
Very small. Mm-hmm. We did this after we hiked Golden Canyon, which again is relatively close to the Artist Palette, made for a great little tag on at the very end.
Yep.
It was hot.
Yeah.
We had already just experienced some serious heat coming.
Gower Gulch.
Off of the Gower Gulch leg of that loop. But then we headed over to Artist Palette. We take the 3.5 mile scenic drive called Artist Drive. Absolutely something you should do in this area of the park. There's no reason not to. Could be combined with a trip out to Badwater Basin in the daylight. This is definitely something that one needs to see in the daylight in order to like appreciate the different colors that are appearing in the landscape. But yeah, you could make this the first trip in your stop that day. We're stringing together things in this episode because they not only, you know, are things you should do, but they're things that you could throw together real quick. You know, when you're on Badwater Road, you could certainly do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe do Badwater Basin like in the sunrise pre-dawn hour, then do Natural Bridge, then Artist Drive and Artist Palette would be sort of, I think, order of operations
order.
On that day if you're doing Badwater with everything. You enter the drive on a one-way road that is very, very winding. There are a lot of dips here. I was driving at this point in the roadway that wind you through these areas of sweeping rock. And it is a very narrow road initially, like tall walls on each side of canyon. There are also a lot of hills here, so it almost felt like you were driving at the crest point of a roller coaster a lot of the time, and then you would like look over and then there'd be a drop.
Oh, sure. That was happening.
This is definitely not the case all the time, but it does feel like that initially. It's an interesting roadway that was cut through for this. The drive is well worth it, as it's fascinating to see the formations and the change of the rock in the landscape as you go.
So eventually the road opens up a little more in the distance, and we can see the palette, or artist palette is what they call it. So we pull off with everyone else to the side of the road. It's definitely a little bit blind leading the blind here, because, you know, all these people were just like making pull-offs on the side of the road. We hike over this small hilly area to the right, get to like a better viewpoint to see the landscape, specifically the palette. And so we're looking at a range in front of us that has a lot of colors. The colors include red and pink and yellow, as well as purple. And what we have come to understand from the science of this is that the red, pink, and the yellow, they are made from iron. They are coming from iron minerals. And then the purple is coming from manganese minerals.
We don't realize that there is a parking area that is right at the palette. And this is a little further away from where we were in this hilly landscape. There's definitely talk of us not going over there and hiking further into the palette, but we ultimately decide to do so because I said, let's do it. Because I am very much so always a proponent, especially when we're in a national park, of
just do it. You're here.
When are we going to be here again?
Let's just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we hike down to the parking lot while Becky goes back to get the car to meet us. So she's going to drive the car over to the parking lot area while we're hiking down to it. She had already done this. So
the hike that we were talking about is off of that parking lot area. So we got to hike down to the parking lot area and then up to this like other viewpoint. That just kind of goes to show you how like close everything is together here. These are not long stretches of trail here. These are like short things to do to add on. Becky has gone to get the car. We start to head down. We are a little more elevated above the parking lot, so we have to trudge down a little bit. There are some others who are doing this with us who also realize, you know, that there's some people who, like Becky, go back to the car, move the car to the parking area. It is a decent sized lot, but it wasn't huge. But there were some parking spots,
yeah,
which was good. And then at the edge of the lot near the signboard, we hiked down into a canyon.
And the canyon was one way you could continue to the quote peak of the palette, but we decided to do some trudging. And there's definitely some uphill here. And after our legs have sort of been through it earlier in the day, we're not necessarily feeling the most excited by this uphill at this point. It's not a long trail, but it is a trudge-worthy trail for sure. When we do get up to the crest, we do a little photo shoot here. And there are so many cool colors. And we had seen some of these earlier in Gower Gulch. So there was a lot of this like mineral depositing that was creating these colors everywhere. And some other things that are a part of those mineral deposits are Uluxite, which there's also some other chemicals that are involved, as well as the iron and manganese.
At this moment, you wanted to hike down from here into the canyon and back.
Yeah, I did.
But I vetoed that.
You did.
I was like, no.
It was a little steep, for sure.
It was steep.
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I gotta pull the veto card.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did. Our rule with the veto card is
one person vetoes, we go along with it.
We both.
Yep.
Yep.
We both turn that sub key.
One veto is a group decision.
Yeah.
You could have gone alone, but again, it was pretty steep. And
yeah.
I was like, I just don't think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
And it was just like an alternative way
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it just was like, no, we're going to go back the way we came.
Yeah.
So we make our way back down to the hill, to the car. That's where we meet up with Becky. And then we continue the drive. And the rest of the drive here is gorgeous. And it puts us back on the main road.
And with that, let's take our second break.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
Shara Michelle Scheller.
That's right, Shara Michelle Scheller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so obviously this is a reference to our queen, Miss Buffy herself.
Mm-hmm.
But we were inspired by the sha sound in the word Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, Shara Michelle Scheller.
Shara Michelle Scheller.
So
indeed.
Who is Shara Michelle Scheller?
Shara Michelle Scheller. It's just fun to say.
It's so much fun to say.
She, I think, has to do Buffy drag. I think it is all Buffy related drag.
Okay. I'm into that.
And I do
think... Is it
think,
Buffy or is it just Sarah Michelle Gellar related drag? Does she do I Know What You Did Last Summer drag?
Does she do Daphne from Scooby-Doo?
Daphne from Scooby-Doo. Does she do Cruel Intentions drag? I feel like I want to open up her universe.
Okay, so it's not just Buffy related.
No, I feel like Sarah Michelle Gellar is like a camp parody version of Sarah Michelle Gellar. Her roles specifically.
Okay. All right. Great.
And I'm going to add this. I don't know how she'd do it. She'd have to be an incredible wordsmith. But I think all of her like patter, like that she says in between her songs, all of her stand up, her spoken comedy, it's all in like SH alliteration.
Well, it's like she shells by
right,
the seashore.
Right. Exactly. So she's always speaking like that. Maybe all of her S's are just SH's.
Okay.
Maybe that's the thing.
She loves it.
She does.
She does. So yeah, it's a really pronounced SH too. Okay, great. She's just doing Sarah Michelle is doing Sarah Michelle drag,
but in a very camp way.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. What will her merchandise be?
Well, I think it's I could see little tiaras.
No, from Cruel Intentions or from
I Know What You Did Last Summer. I could see that.
I feel like we need some stakes.
Yeah, we definitely
I think they're stakes that are camping stakes.
I like that. I was going to say they're double. Stakes, but they also double as like a pen that you
write okay,
with,
great.
Like something like that, right?
Uh-huh.
So there's that. So you can sign your Hollywood contracts.
That's right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
What about her music?
That's a good question. I'm trying to feel like she's got to do like she was Sarah Michelle was a 90s like
late 90s early aughts
like personality. Yeah. So I feel like she has to do like her music needs to nod to all of that.
Totally. Like, it divas, needs to be from that time. Yeah, right?
Divas of that era.
Yeah. And maybe it's about slaying monsters or whatever.
Yeah.
Like she makes the act about doing that.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think about what that could be, where it becomes a choreographed experience.
She could do like Liz Phair, like Why Can't I? And it's about killing vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I breathe whenever I think about you? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into that.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we get more Liz Phair.
Yeah, she just was a blip in our world.
She was. Mm-hmm. She actually told a story
more
at the
like
Moth.
Liz Unfair.
Right, correct. She told a story at the Moth about like why like she was such like an indie girl for a long time and then like became a mainstream person and was accused of like selling out and all this stuff and like sort of what it was like to try and get something going after the one big thing hit.
Oh, the one big hit.
Know?
Yeah.
So
had
it was an interesting story. But anyway, I like Sarah Michelle Gellar for this reason, because she's like...
She's resurrecting Liz Phair.
And I think just generally like 90s ladies, right?
Sure. Little Natalie Imbruglia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amy Grant.
See, it
I'm
all came
always
back.
Gonna... Go
All
back
came
to
back
Amy
for
Grant.
Amy Grant.
Mm-hmm. Vanessa Carlton, right?
So like the B-sides of the 90s girls is what we're looking at.
Totally.
Okay.
Totally.
The like had a flash in the pan sort of moment.
Anna Nalick.
Anna
That's right. 2 a.m. because she's up slaying monsters.
That's right.
That's right. 2 a.m. also about breathing.
Okay, great. Yeah. I love it. So Thaddeus and Gentlethems, please welcome to the stage.
Sarah Michelle Scheller. All right, it's time for our final part of our Small Trails episode, which is the Devil's Golf Course.
That's right, which is very strange. After seeing Badwater Basin and the crystal formations that were there in the moonlight, the next thing that you should do is look for even funkier formations. That would be at Devil's Golf Course. This is another level of salt formations, for sure.
It's very true. So this is also off of Badwater Road. Following the road back from Artist Palette to Badwater, you can see a bunch of cars on the salt flat. There is like a longish pull-off road here. In order to get to Devil's Golf Course, it's like a big long L off of Badwater Road. Yeah. So it takes like a pull-off. You got to go down the road and it's kind of like a left-hand turn. We make the pull-off and we go down this dirt road into this parking lot that is organized but also totally disorganized.
Yeah, it feels like chaotic parking, like textbook examples of chaotic parking.
Totally. Because
it's just kind of an open circular area.
Yeah.
park right. wherever, come as you may. Yeah,
exactly. And this is less of a hike and more of a get out and look experience.
It is.
There's no trail. Mm-mm. But this is a wild, wild thing to see because I've never seen anything like it before. The natural formations they're insane with sort of just like how they look. And it's wild compared to Badwater. Technically, this formation is a little off of the flat proper.
Like off of Badwater Basin, yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it's any less weird. Talk about the formations here.
They're kind of like these salt drip castles. That's the best way. Like, I feel like it almost felt like a little kingdom of salt buildings. There are arches and like holes through these like structures that have been built up. And it's just fascinating that all of this is just naturally occurring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they are solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not like formed its way into something. And, you know, the way like the mounds are at Badlands, that'll sort of like disintegrate in your hand if you like rub them long enough.
Yeah.
This is completely solid. They do look like sand drip castles, but it's like hardened sand drip cast in like it's like they're hardened and crystallized.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. There are a group of like these 20 to 30 year old Portuguese or Italian men who ask me to take their photo. Speaking of people asking, you know, taking photos of people because I had my camera with me and they're like, they had like an SLR, a digital SLR, and they're like, oh, we'll ask him. He knows what he's doing. And so we spend some time here, but it doesn't really, you can spend as long or as little here. You can kind of walk out into the salts area here and just explore. It is a little treacherous. You do have to watch your step because you could very easily trip and eat it and not in a very fun way.
To give you like a tiny little bit of context, I knelt down to like get a photo of one of these little formations up close. And I like lost my balance a little bit and like my knee gently grazed the side of one of them. But it was enough to like just rip my skin open and cause bleeding. Because I got back to the car and y'all were like, your leg is bleeding, like down your leg. And so I had to like get a Band-Aid on it and whatnot, get it cleaned up. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like tiny little like crystal sharp points are coming out from everywhere. And so they will pierce your skin.
After being here for a little bit, we take our time. We try our best. This is where the salt becomes an issue in the car because we're in boots here. We didn't change out of our boots.
Very glad we kept boots on to go through this Devil's Golf Course area because otherwise, like, that salt could maybe get through a sneaker, like at least the side of a sneaker, maybe not the bottom of a sneaker.
But I'm just saying, like, we didn't take our boots off and then the salt got everywhere in the car. So this is, if you are going to Badwater Basin or Devil's Golf Course, when we were at Badwater, we did change our boots off, put them in the back of the car, put sneakers on. We didn't do that here. And so the salt ended up all on the mats in the front. And it was a problem to get that salt out later. Like, it became very ingrained into the car fibers. So just be mindful of that.
While this is similar, I'm just going to say this, and most people who listen to the show probably don't need to hear this, but if you're brand new experiencing like salt out in the nature, this is not like table salt. You should not eat any of it.
No,
this is not like that. Similar, this has not been made for edible purposes.
No, not right? human
so
consumable salt.
Do not
here.
Eat any of the salt from a salt flat. Mm-mm. From here, we did decide to check out one other little place.
And this was something that we used as a little bit of a heat release for our entire time in Death Valley because we were there when it was so hot. And that is Stovepipe Wells, which is in the opposite direction from where we had been spending most of our time at this point. It's like a continuation on 190. So we have to head back Badwater Road. Instead of turning to the right when we arrived at 190, we are going to go left, which would take us past Furnace Creek Visitor Center and Campground. And it would basically be about a half hour from there out to Stovepipe Wells. If you're going to Death Valley, there is a lot of driving involved from point to point. So just be aware of that. But this is sort of like a lodgy hotel area, Stovepipe Wells. The nice thing is that they had a pool and they also had showers and our campground didn't. So it allowed us an opportunity when it was very hot in the middle of the day after we had completed all of our hiking, but didn't want to just sit back at the hot campsite to spend a few hours, have a very, very cold pool to dip our bodies into.
That's right. And then a shower. Shaded area to sit in and to shower as well.
And to read and do whatnot. This was basically our afternoon plan anytime that we were in Death Valley. And it was really, really lovely.
Okay, let's quickly put some of this on the Karen Stone scale.
It's kind of funny to do this because they are such small,
so short.
Small
okay,
trails.
So Natural Bridge.
Natural Bridge is like, I would say a three. Yeah.
Three.
Totally.
So 6 out of 20 Karen Stones.
You got to do some trudging. It's loose stone. It's, you know, it's not easy by any means, but it's not difficult.
Correct.
Like, it doesn't drift past 5, I would say.
Artist palette. I think I'm going to give that a 4. Because of just like up and over and the incline and the whatnot and the coming off of the hills. And then anyway,
I still feel like a 3 is good for me there.
Great.
So 7 out of 20.
Okay.
And then really there's nothing for Devil's Golf Course. It's just watch your step is the only thing I would say. It's not for some people. It's just going to be a get out of the car and look. That's perfectly fine. You can get to the edge of the quote-unquote parking lot and still get a really cool look at the salt flat formations without having to trudge through them at all. But it can be treacherous. But since it's a choose-your-own-adventure and you don't have to go out very far, I would say it's kind of like a non-rater.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's end this episode like we end all of our episodes with some Jeopardy-style trivia. All right, Mike, why don't you get us started with your category of Jeopardy today?
Great. So I was inspired by the term artist palette.
Oh,
so
shock.
This is all about artwork that is very common, like you would know it. And what I'm going to actually ask you, this is a color theory test for y'all.
I'm ready.
So you're going to need to know your color theory based off of the paintings and the way that I'm describing them.
Okay.
So, great. For 100, Roy Lichtenstein's iconic comic book imagery pop art paintings employed black and white and these three basic colors, which are found in nature and cannot be mixed, and may also describe a type of school that very young children go to.
What are the three primary colors?
That's correct.
What
can you name them?
That they can't be mixed.
They cannot be made. They're colors that are naturally occurring.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. They can be mixed together to make other colors.
Well, that's how you get secondaries,
and it's red, blue, and yellow.
That's correct. Yeah. Look at that. And so Roy Lichtenstein is a pop artist who employed those colors plus black and white and Bende dots to create different values in between them. Great. For 200, Sunflowers by Vincent van Gogh features a range of colors on the color wheel from yellow to yellow orange to orange. When three colors are next to each other like this on the color wheel, they are known as a color family or this color scheme, which is an adjective that could mean similar.
What is analogous?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Look at you. You get the gold star for color theory knowledge.
Thank you.
For 300, Guernica by Pablo Picasso is an incredibly large painting that features the horrors of war, specifically the bombing of this city. Painted in his signature Cubist style, the painting is only shades of gray, black, and white. This expression of tones from white to black could also be an expression of this, one of the elements of art, which also has a monetary meaning.
What is achromatic?
No.
It is an achromatic scale, though, if it's
but
white.
But that's not what
black.
I was looking for.
No, ask the question again.
It is an expression of tones from white to black that could also be an expression of this, one of the elements of art, which also has a monetary meaning.
What is value?
That's correct.
Okay, there
Look
you go.
Look at that. For 400, The Scream by Edvard Munch is a fascinating painting that delves deep into psychology and historical events, specifically the reddish, more orangey hues of the sky that are believed to be an accurate representation of the sky from when the volcano Krakatoa erupted in Indonesia. This orange sky with the blue landscape just below it is an example of this color scheme, which puts colors directly opposite each other on the color wheel next to each other so that they vibrate and catch the eye. The term also may be akin to saying that you look nice today or good job.
What is complimentary?
That's correct.
That is right. And blue and orange are complementary.
That's correct. Can you name the other main complementary color sets?
Oh, sure. So like purple and yellow.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And then red and green.
That's right. Look at that.
Because of the holidays.
Because of capitalism. And for 500, Red Cana by Georgia O'Keeffe is one of the artist's signature close-up flower images that almost feels abstract. While there is some purple in the painting, the colors red, orange, and yellow are the most dominant. This is an example of this type of color scheme, which may be what you are while sitting in front of a fire or on the beach on a sunny day.
What is warm?
That's correct. Look at you. You get the gold star for color theory knowledge.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I considered writing a color theory category.
Well, you did.
for about 5 minutes. And then I didn't because I got inspired by something else.
Great. And you were like, Mike will probably do that.
I wasn't sure. Yeah. I actually thought I was like, he could. Or yeah. He might say, no, I'm not interested in that because I wouldn't have done it the way you just did it. And I really loved the way you just did it, how it was referential to specific art in that way.
Yeah.
So that's the value that you bring.
That's right. And now you also have some color theory knowledge, everybody, if you didn't before.
That's right. Okay. I think my category, we say this all the time because we make these Jeopardy categories inspired by the episode. We've been in this for 8 seasons. And when we never tell each other what the Jeopardy category is.
No.
And we have never written the same category.
No.
Or a similar category.
No.
Ever. I don't know. I feel like the day we do, is that when the show is done?
I don't know. That's it, everybody. It's been great.
Are you ready for my category?
I am.
Okay, so I was inspired by golf courses.
Great.
And I was inspired by golf scoring terms and their relationship to birds.
Oh, what a surprise.
Because that is very true. That's a thing that happens. So are you ready for some golf scoring terms for your category?
Certainly.
Golf terms and birds is what we're calling this.
Great.
So for 100, this score in golf is not named for a bird, but it means to have scored one stroke over par. But this term is derived from a term for a Scottish goblin. This might be hard if you've never heard golf terms.
I just know like terms. Two or three golf terms and like...
Oh, okay.
So I know the bird ones.
This is the non-bird one is yeah. the beginning of the category.
What is... I'm like, feel like it's an obvious term and I'm like...
I don't know that it's that obvious.
What is imp?
No. The answer we were looking for is what is bogey?
Bogey. That's it.
Yeah. Bogey is actually inspired by like they spell it that way, like boogeyman, but bogeyman. And it's like a goblin or like, you know, the way we think of a boogeyman.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, great. For 200, this avian term for a golf score means to have scored one under par. Rather than names for a specific bird, it is more of a general term and was given the name for a golf ball flying down the fairway.
What is a birdie?
That is correct. Uh-huh. So a birdie. Okay, for 300. This golf score, meaning to have scored two strokes under par, is named for this leader of raptors of the golden or bald variety.
What is an eagle?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if you're playing a par three and you eagled... Then you also did what?
You were 2 under par.
Yes, which means you also did what?
You were in the negative.
If you're in a par three and you get 2 under par.
Oh, you got one.
You got a hole in one, which is also known as an ace. The rule about aces, though, in golf is that if you did it by yourself, then it doesn't count. You have to have another person witness it in order for it to count.
Sure.
Anyway, that's the rule.
Sure.
Someone else has got to be there lying. To see it. You could be lying. Right. Eagle is more of a term like if you're on a... Because par has got to be higher, right?
Yeah.
So most pars are either like... There's some par twos, but it's mostly par three, par four, par five, right?
Or parfait.
There it is. So eagle would probably be more like a par four term or a par five term.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. For 400... This score means to have scored 3 strokes under par and is named for this bird, a large seabird known for its giant wingspan and its ability to glide long distances over oceans. And in many ways, looks like a seagull, but it features webbed feet and a wingspan that is taller than most humans.
What is an albatross?
That is correct.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a golf term.
That is the golf term.
A golf term.
That is a golf term because, but again, three strokes under par, you don't hear it that often because like that would be more of a par five term or a par six. And I don't even, and I've seen plenty of golf courses. I don't know that I've ever seen a par six, right? So yeah, that would be like, I got a par five and two strokes would be an albatross. Okay, great. And then finally, for 500, this even rarer golf score, meaning four under par, is named for this other large raptor bird, also known for its huge wingspan, one that we even saw this year in Pinnacles National Park.
What's a condor?
That is right. Wild. So you condored. So that would be like on a par six. Perhaps. Because like, again, if you ace, you're going to say you ace.
Yeah.
But if you are on a par five, I'm sorry, if you're on a par six and you get four under par and you somehow manage to get that in two, then you condored.
Interesting. Well, things I didn't know.
There you go.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sclios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.